system.
What about the exudates producing? They would actually be microbial food? Could they be stimulating the microbes?
They could be. They could be. But a lot of the controls, too, have a standard treatment in there as well, with some fungicide as well to help deplete that, to look at the controls versus the treatments. So there are ways of looking at that. But it's been pretty effective for us.
Thank you very much.
So a lot of you are working with standard microbiological treatments. And you know, a lot of the ecological data, especially for mycorrhizae, suggests that even 100 meters different, right, different strain effects. So what concerns do you have about the idea that you're going to be treating it nationally with microbes that may not be optimal for the particular region or for the soil type or ecology? That either you're going to be changing the soil microbiology adversely, or that your products may not be effectively in those kinds of conditions. Because most of your tests are potting soil in the lab, that is not exactly Minnesota in winter.
Yeah, right. I'm good. I think I can speak loud enough. In terms of mycorrhiza, you're right. Mycorrhiza, most people know about this study. Actually, it was a colleague PhD, couple of PhDs, thesis back in my country, that they prove a mycorrhiza is not crop specific. There is families that, I'm talking about endomycorrhiza. There is families of plants that they don't form association with, but mycorrhiza, there's not crop specific. There are soil condition specific. Luckily for us, in the study, they revealed that it was a few, like four or five mycorrhiza species that they, let's say that they were capable to perform decently in most of the agricultural soil conditions, in terms of fertility conditions. I mean, we're not talking to streams. We're talking about lands that they are used to agricultural conditions. That's the two species that we were with that was based on that, was based on those species that are known to at least decently perform in most of the agricultural conditions. But that's a really good point that you're choosing. Because it's a huge impact when you put, we should take consideration each environmental condition and biology that's already adapted to those conditions to be put in.
And addressing those ecological concerns again, there's a couple of recent studies, not sure if you can hear me or not, but there's a couple of recent studies that are showing that non-native microbial species, they really can't compete with the natives when their host is removed. So if there is no plant feeding via this root exudation, there really isn't any way to stabilize these microbial counts. So we haven't found any leftover microbial species that we don't want in the soil after harvest.
Question, but that runs counter to what we know about the Midwest where rhizobia has been used as an inoculant, and we know that inoculants grow for several years, and that inoculants can actually, particularly for soybean, be present in soil for 3 to 4 years without proper growth.
Well, yeah, that's a great counterpoint. We haven't seen any indication of that, and the studies that I'm addressing, I believe, were done in India in the past in 2017, 2018, and are more referring to consortium species. In terms of heavy use of rhizobium year after year, I can't really speak to that. But.
I'd like to just respond that. Rhizobium survival is not necessarily a negative. It doesn't impact rotation of corn negatively, but it's a plus for the soybean rotation when it goes back in. And I know a lot of farmers just don't inoculate soybeans at all because they know they've got a buildup of inoculant in the ground, and they just do fine without it. Or maybe they'll inoculate every other rotation and take advantage of that carryover.
That's correct.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't the point actually. And the general microbe soil level down to that point. By doing that, you have to compete natives, possibly to the detriment of soil microbiology population for long term. Rhizobium has, you know, we always had that possibility with rhizobium as well. doesn't turn out to be one of the key players in terms of alteration of microbial structure. Maybe it's potential.
Well, I know for them this.
And the mycorrhizal area, I worked with a series of soil ecologists, and they tell me that they isolate native mycorrhizae. That one of the things they're very concerned about is reforestation and reintroduction. And they say that even if you go 100 meters, same species, and that those strains look to be important in the profiles of the functioning of the mycorrhizae. So if you put one or two strains that have national utility, but you put them into environments that are quite different, you may change that soil structure in terms of its transmission.
Now, you raise a very good point about this, and I think it's important that we recognize where we're moving to. So traditional ag chemistry is used extensively on our soils, and you could argue that that has had a really negative impact on the actual soil structure of what's there. And now the large companies that are involved in this are trying to move away from some of that technology, and there's a lot of emphasis into the more friendly seed treatments or chemical treatments that are going on. And we're making that move, and we're hoping that that brings back some balance, because there's a lot of regulatory affairs and people that are upset with the current system of chemical inputs going into our grounds. And so I think this move that we're making now is more responsible for us to allow us the opportunity to do some of the right things involved. And you're going to see more and more of that in our industry. And there's not going to be a lot of answers that we have today, but certainly we hope we're making the right decisions, as you mentioned, about maintaining the soil ecology and doing the right thing there. I think that's our best hope here.
Good point. Taylor, how close are you to recommending any biological products for IR for pesticide exemption? The weather criteria?
Yeah, that's a good question. In fact, IR4 is asking me now, what are you doing with our money? So, first of all, the results that I gave here briefly is just one of six field studies that are being conducted. So, we need to kind of pull together that data set, especially as we're looking at Virginia Tech as a southern region, North Dakota as the north central region. So to see, how consistent are the results, or is what is really going on there as far as trends are concerned. At this particular point, based on where we are, we just feel like we're kind of cutting our teeth on the biologicals with the hemp, trying to really understand the hemp seed science and technology so we can maybe do a better job with that, either in application technology. As I was saying, we're screening some of these different seed treatment binders and things like that. I think we need to do some better job at optimizing the system to try to get a little bit better performance. We kind of use our soil bioassay kind of as something we can do 24/7. It's not the field, but at least it is a field soil component rather than just an artificial inoculum. So I feel like we can continue to do some work. And I'm actually hoping through this workshop that hearing some of the other speakers, some of the biologicals that they're working on is, we're kind of in this game. So we want to look, the materials that are there are not the only materials that we can look at, because we're really looking at trying to find a solution. But I know I'm just layering a lot of different talking points because there's really no one single answer. But I think it really depends on if the grower is growing for grain or fiber and is not an organic grower, they could, once we get to the light of day, could use a chemical seed treatment legally in their particular application. It's where we get into having the need for an organic seed treatment than a material that is OMRI approved. And I would say at this exact point in time, I'm not there at that point to make any recommendations. But again, we're kind of at the beginning of this, and I think even at the end of this growing season, we're going to know a lot more by pulling together the data that we have from the multi-states and the multi-regions to really better assess where we're at. But thank you. That's really a challenging question, which is kind of the underlying question behind this entire research program with IR4.
Tony?
I've got a big, more like crazy question, I guess. Where most of the time when people are teaching people about seed science and the way that it all works, and especially when they're talking about the biologicals, usually they will approach it from corn and soy, like starch seed and oil seed. But when you're dealing with all the different kinds of like fruits and vegetables that are out there, all the different kinds of seeds, I think that understanding the biologicals of the individual species, I'm not sure that that's taught or well understood. And so do you think that understanding what the seed naturally does and how it interacts with the biologicals specifically with all the different kinds of seeds, do you think that that would be helpful in trying to figure out what kinds of biological treatments to apply to the different seeds? They're not going to be the same all of the time. I feel like they're going to be different. They might have similarities, but they're going to be different. Like if it's lettuce or a radish or like a new.
Well, let me just take a stab at that since I also teach a course in seed science and technology at Cornell. If we look at the composition of vegetable seeds, and I've written a chapter, which is a vegetable crop physiology book that Chris Wien is putting out to be the second edition, so I have a kind of a compendium of information, all that compositional. If you look at vegetable crops across the board, they are lipid, fat-storing seeds with a few exceptions. Peas, corn, beans, those are starch. The large seeded seeds are starch-storing seeds. So I think it's important to have that, to understand that, but that's really just one part of this. So I don't think you can really make a clear distinction, well, biological will work if it's a starch-storing seed versus that. I think it just really gives you that fundamental information of what the seed is composed of, but it's not going to answer until you really do your homework as far as really testing the different systems and then what soil system. And then we're targeting, like with that soil pathogen assay, we're looking at Pythium. Well, what happens with Rhizoc? What happens with Fusarium? What happens? So you know, we'd like to try to make as tight a picture as we can and focus the answer. This is really good. But then you get into the field, and then you're dealing with the millennium of other microorganism pathogens, then the environment. This year, it for us in the Northeast and much of the Midwest is so much rain, which was great for soil pathogens, but it was so wet we couldn't even get out there to plant. So then there's all these other little realities that we have to deal with. And then, like I said, even with the pathogen, for example, Pythium, you know, why aren't any of these darn biologicals working? And if you look at the pathogen itself, just starts from that part. Pythium attacks very rapidly. So these poor biologicals, they've already been applied, they're dry, they're kind of just sitting there. The CFUs, they're there, but they're just kind of sitting there. You're planting them, they have to get themselves revved up and going and start to colonize the root system. Well, if that Pythium, you know, it's just like, you know, rock 'em sock 'em robots. If they get the first punch in, they can really kind of do a knockout punch on those seeds, and it may be manifested later on with the post-emergence. So again, knowing the pathogen. So the pathogen is also important in this whole thing. So it becomes a very large complex that what you're dealing with. But we're trying to solve problems with trying to be as environmentally friendly, as Peter said and other people said, as we can and going this way. It's just to make a really focused, tailored system is a challenge. The field crops people are further ahead because they know the genetics, they know the crop, they know the soils much better, it's much better defined. They don't have as much variation to deal with it that we do, but it still is even there for them. But usually the way they're using biologicals, they're biologicals in combination with chemicals. We throw in a treatment like that. So the Apron Max gives you the protection up front. Then you have the biological, if you want the rhizosphere competence and some of those other attributes and root colonization, enhanced nutrient uptake. So using these things together is more of the real world. But if you're that organic grower, you can't have those chemical inputs into the system. So you're trying to limp along somewhat, totally just using the biological system. Really good question. Thank you very much for that one.
How do you determine the concentration of the microbiologicals? Like, I saw like CFU counts of 10 up to 6 or something, but I saw in the other slide there are different concentrations of the microbials to the treatments. So how do you determine, how do you optimize the inoculation process or
Well, we were kind of use rate focused, and so we wanted to make sure that with a low application rate at like 50 grams or so is where we're at, we wanted to make sure that we had enough viable counts. So we kind of took a broader approach. Rather than looking for a calculated minimum number, we made sure that we had an overwhelming number of CFUs per gram. So we guarantee 10 to the 6th on the label, but we usually have around 10 to the 9th in the product, so we make sure that we can have that stability and guarantee our minimums to the grower to make sure that the product has efficacy.
Fernando, do you want
to? So the seedling growth condition is very important. So we have seen some variations. So one is how the growing condition median. And also, we recently noticed that the delivery system is very critical, too. So I think in publication-wise, there's missing information, like how we should effectively deliver bacterial fungus. This is a big gap that I think we should address. So.
Yeah, in terms of mycorrhizae, it's simple to count. To count how many propagules you got in your product, there's a technique for propagule extraction. You count it, that what Simin says. Now, to guarantee how many propagules I get per seed, that's a challenge I need you guys to help me solve. Because I'm not in the seed industry, so we're working together trying to achieve that. That's a big challenge. Because my grass has a big size propagule, so it's the attachment to the seed is kind of difficult.
Okay.
So I think so years ago, when I used to work for a small federal agency, the USDA, I worked with a group of people in the pesticide degradation lab who were microbiologists and better microbiologists than me. And a plant pathologist was interested in fruit diseases post-harvest. And the technique that we evolved was to isolate the cell walls of the target pathogen, in that case, botrytis, and to look for microbes that grew on those cell wall fragments. It turned out to be extremely selective in terms of being able to pull out bacteria that actually were extremely good antagonists to botrytis, and we could actually show markedly reductions in botrytis growth on the surface using that technique. It seems very applicable to what you're doing. For example, you could isolate something that grew on pythium cell walls and then add to your seed coating pythium wall fragments so bacteria will prime or attack on that kind of system. Is anything like that being approached in what you're doing? Because I think there is potential. Like I said, an idea.
Sure. Well, we appreciate that. Yeah, thank you. Well, idea-wise, that's fantastic. But in terms of product development, that's extremely cost-intensive process. I mean, that's small federal agency, like you said. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds great. Yeah. If you got any more, kick it my way.
Yeah.
they all said.
We have time for just one more question. Any last question? Okay, two more, yeah.
My question is from the gentleman from Sakata. What do you see as the rate of adoption or people rate of conversion for growers in either market, the commodity crops or vegetable crops, going towards biological seed treatment? Yes, for you.
Sakata, yeah.
So your question?
It was, how many people do you see converting to buy biological?
Oh, okay. So actually, the industry is very interested. So so we have meeting internal, external. So this is will be number one priority for seed technology. So the conventional chemistry actually, availability is limited. Regulation, cost, everything, and but by biological, everyone is interested. For organic grower, they request organically treated the seed, but basically it's not available. So, and for conventional one, historically we don't have many choices. So, we have one listed in my present T22, but somehow they have exclusive rights through certain channel. And it's highly expensive, so most companies will not go for that way. But today, the landscape has been shifted, so there are more availability. So the real challenge is how fast we can adopt. So a lot of research efforts. So, but if you look at the publication, there's not much available in this area. So that's why we hope that public sector can work very heavily in this area.
Well, I think it's time now, so thank you so much for staying to the end.